cheek that ran from the corner of a full mouth to a bionic eye, not unlike the one worn by Vice Admiral Screed.
His code cylinder identified him as Commander LaSalle.
One moment, Administrator, Tarkin said, stepping out of cam range and turning to the nearest specialist in the command post. Run the hologram through the roster database. If indeed there is a Commander LaSalle, find out where he is currently deployed. Yes, sir, the specialist said. Tarkin moved back into view of the holocam. You were saying, Administrator?
Only that LaSalle's rank plaque insignia and command cap disc looked legitimate.
Tarkin wasn't surprised. With all the shipjackers had already accomplished, forging command cylinder codes and insignias must have been child's play. Sir, the specialist said from his station, the roster shows a Commander Abel LaSalle deployed aboard the Star Destroyer Sovereign, currently docked at Fondor. But the likenesses don't match up the way they should. Shall I contact the Sovereign? Tarkin shook his head. That won't be necessary. The words had scarcely left his mouth when a Starfighter signals officer entered in a rush. Governor Tarkin, Lord Vader requests that you join him in the bay soonest. Tarkin ended the duplex transmission and hurried through the hatch and across the deck to where a yellow and gray V-wing was powering up. The canopy was open, and a red astromech occupied a socket aft of the cockpit. Vader's black Eta II warmed nearby. Catching sight of Tarkin, the Dark Lord grabbed a flight helmet and life support chest pack and carried them to him.
Highly recommended,
Vader said, handing over the gear. Tarkin began to slip into the chest pack.
It seems your calculations were correct, Governor.
Yes, but coming all this way had to be a stretch for them. There's good reason to suspect that they did, in fact, refuel before launching from Mercana.
Then someone may have warned them away from Chromas.
A point worth considering, Tarkin said. In addition, they've betrayed themselves in other ways. Not only are they conversant with the Carrion Spike's instruments, they are also well acquainted with Imperial procedure. The self-styled commander looks every bit an officer, and he used code cylinders to requisition the fuel cells. He looked up at Vader. Some of the Empire's own?
The Emperor has limited patience for puzzles, Governor. Whoever they are, we need to put an end to their game.
The tanker orbited above hospitable Findar. A lengthy cylinder of unshielded alloy, the enormous station's aft bridge was elevated above a trapezoid of shielding that protected a quartet of sublight engines and the generic hyperdrive. Pressurized radioactive gas, liquid metal, and composites were housed in proprietary sections. Extravehicular droids of several varieties carried out refueling operations by installing fresh fuel cells in starships and removing and transporting spent cells to storage bins anchored along the tanker's starboard side. The Carrion Spike was still umbilical to the station, its bow facing the huge tanker's trapezoidal stern, as Teller hastened through the docking ring airlock and into the main cabin. "Retract the transfer tube and get us out of here," he shouted toward the command cabin. "Trouble?" Honora asked, leaping from her chair. Teller shook his head while he peeled the scar from his cheek and the fake implant from his left eye. "That's the problem. Everything went way too smoothly. The Findian didn't question anything. Didn't even ask about the ship or the special fuel cells."
"You said yourself we're just another corvette out here,"
Honora said. "Not up close, we're not." Hearing the segmented umbilical retract into the hull, Teller hurried for the command cabin, Honora right on his heels.
"Easing us away,"
Salik said from the captain's chair. The corvette lurched slightly as maneuvering jets separated it from the tanker. Teller moved to the forward viewports to sweep his gaze over local space.
"What are you looking for?"
Artos asked from one of the other chairs.
"I won't know till I see it," Teller started to say when Carla cut him off.
"Ship reverting rimward."
He paused to study the sensors.
"Imperial escort carrier. On screen."
Teller,
Honora, Hask, and Artos crowded behind Carla's chair as an image resolved of a boxy vessel with a curved upper hull and a flat ventral one. Aft, the hull extended over the carrier's engines.
"Transponder signature identifies it as the Goliath," Carla continued, "capable of carrying a wing of starfighters, armed with 10 Tame and Back H-8s and the Krupex missile delivery system. Not much in the way of shields."
"I'm not interested in testing its metal," Teller said.
"It could be here simply to refuel,"
Artos said, sounding unconvinced. Abruptly, the escort vanished from the screen.
"Where'd it go?"
Honora asked. And just as abruptly, the escort reappeared, now visible through the forward viewports.
"Micro-jump," Carla said. "And deploying starfighters."
Teller watched as starfighters dropped from the escort's deployment chute.
"V-wings, led by an Eta II Actis. Bets on who's piloting the black one,"
Hask said. Honora was shaking her head in dismay.
"How did they know?"
Teller's dark eyes were wide with surprise. "Darkon may have figured if he could scare us away from Gromast by sending ships, we'd come to Findar."
"Or he hedged his bet," Artos said. "Capital ships at Gromas. He and Vader here."
Teller shook himself alert. "Doesn't much matter now." He turned to Carla. "How much time do we have?"
"A quarter hour," Lukorovar told him.
"Marking that,"
Artos said. "How far to the nearest jump point?" Salik swung to the navicomputer.
"We need to get out of the way of Findar and the principal moon."
"Then you've got some fancy flying to do first," Teller said. "Keep us as close to the tanker as possible, and protect the hyperdrive generator at all costs. A couple of errant beams and everything's toast."
"Don't we know it?"
Carla said. Salik laughed shortly and madly.
"If you think that'll keep Vader and Tarkin from firing, you're your own worst enemies."
Teller ignored the remark and looked at Honora. "Get your cams ready."
"Stay on my left wing,"
Vader told Tarkin over the tactical net as they fairly fell out of the escort, five additional pairs of V-wings at their backs. The mammoth cylindrical tanker was straight ahead of them, profiled against the planet and with the carrion spike just beginning to drop beneath it. The shipjackers intent on putting the tanker between themselves and the approaching starfighters. With the corvette all but wedded bow to stern to the tanker, there was little point in enabling the ship's stealth system. Schematics of the carrion spike's airframe and hyperdrive generator had been uploaded into the targeting computer of each starfighter and astromech, as well as into the fire control systems of the Goliath. A precise strike from whose larger guns could be enough to immobilize the corvette. The squadron pilots reported in by call signs, yellows 3 through 12, as they formed up on Vader's black starfighter and accelerated toward the tanker. "Our goal is to force the corvette to lower its deflector shields before we return fire," Tarkin said through his helmet headset. "Once we've done so, our priority will be to target the hyperdrive generator, which is aft of the main guns along the corvette's spine." A chorus of distorted voices acknowledged the directives.
"Affirmative, yellow 2.
Tarkin's right hand nudged the joystick, while his left made adjustments to the instruments. Little more than a single pilot fuselage pod, sitting on vertically stacked ion engines and flanked by deployable heat-radiating stability foils, the V-wing had been designed for speed and nimbleness, at the expense of a reliable life support system or hyperdrive. Twin ion cannons bracketed the long, wedge-shaped prow. It had been years since he had piloted one, and despite the spaciousness of the cockpit and the broad view through the paned transparisteel canopy, he felt claustrophobic, strapped into the seat by safety webbing and encumbered by gloves, flight boots, and helmet. With the hinged targeting computer intruding on his port-side view, the cockpit seemed more suitable to a double-jointed Geonosian. The old Delta 7 Aether Sprite was roomy by comparison, the Arc 170 luxurious. Things could have been worse, however. The Goliath could have been carrying a squadron of the new and seemingly disposable TIE fighters.
Commencing attack run,
Vader said. With the astromech chirping commands to the inertial compensator, Tarkin fed more power to the engines to stay abreast of and slightly behind Vader, and plummeted toward the tanker. Immediately he realized that the shipjackers were not simply attempting to hide. They were executing what amounted to a slow roll that was keeping the vulnerable dorsal surface of the carrion spike facing the curved hull of the much larger vessel. As the corvette disappeared behind the port side, Vader climbed, determined to fall on the ship, only to find when he and Tarkin arrived that the carrion spike was showing them her belly rather than her spine. They unleashed a hail of ion cannon fire regardless, and came about for another rapacious run. The corvette upside down on top of the tanker by then, and beginning to arc down along the vessel's starboard hull, her positioning jets flaring. Descending, the carrion spike fell prey to four starfighters, which unloaded on her, taxing the resiliency of her powerful shields, but emerging from the confrontation unscathed. Not until the corvette was tucked safely behind the tanker once more did she reply, with powerful volleys from the lateral laser cannons that caught Yellows 7 and 8 and disintegrated them. Jinking at the outer edge of the field of fire, Vader and Tarkin followed the ship into her second revolution, hammering away at her as she crawled out from beneath the tanker, but with no tangible results. With Tarkin still clinging to the Eta II's left wing, Vader powered out of his dive, rolled over, and rushed to re-engage, coming dangerously close to the tanker in an effort to squeeze himself between it and the ascending carrion spike, and forcing Tarkin to decelerate into a tandem position. Fire from Vader's ion cannons coruscated across the corvette from bow to stern, but the shields continued to hold. Strengthened, Tarkin guessed, by rerouting power from the cannons and sublight maneuvering jets. The carrion spike slowed considerably as she reached the crest of her tortuous loop. But once arrived, the ship delivered a triple barrage of laser fire that forced four of the starfighters to diverge, one of them shearing away a piece of the tanker's elevated aft bridge before spinning out of control and exploding. Vader's voice boomed through the net.
Yellows 3 and 4, 10 and 12, form up on Yellow 2 and follow our attack run. Direct continuous fire at the corvette's command center.
Tarkin mimicked Vader's evasive maneuvers, while the four starfighters raced in to join them. Then the half-dozen banked as one to begin their runs. Maintaining fire discipline, Tarkin tightened his hand on the joystick and swooped in, the astromech transmitting targeting data to the cockpit's display screen. Beams began to find their way through the shields and pock the corvette's gleaming hull. One after the next, the starfighters harried the larger ship, drenching the shields with ion fire as she dropped under the lightly armored hull of the tanker for a third time.
They can't hide inside those shields for much longer,
Vader said over the net.
Echelon formation on Yellow 2 and re-engage.
They launched their attack as the carrion spike was drifting up alongside the tanker's starboard side. Tarkin's targeting reticle went red and the laser lock tone filled the cockpit. He dived and was going for a kill shot when proximity alarms began to blare, and he glanced up in time to see six ARC-170s spring from one of the tanker's forward bays. Leaning on the joystick, he slewed hard to starboard, his shots going wide of their mark as the tactical net grew cacophonous with shouts of caution. Vader's Eta II and the rest of the V-wings fanned out in search of clear space as the ARC-170s reeled into their midst, narrowly avoiding collisions.
Abort the run,
Vader told everyone. Tarkin opened the battle net to the Goliath. Contact the tanker administrator. Order him to recall his fighters at once. They're creating chaos out here. The specialist at the far end of the communications link acknowledged the request, then returned a moment later to deliver the bad news.
Governor Tarkin, the administrator has refused the order.
Refused? On what pretext?
Sir, he replies that the tanker is his property and that you are not his governor.
Goliath, do you have a clear visual on the carrion spike?
Affirmative, sir.
Then ready your proton torpedoes to target the corvette as soon as she appears at the crest of the tanker hull.
All due respect, sir, the tanker and the corvette might as well be joined at the hip.
It was the voice of the Goliath's commander.
And with our starfighters all over the field, one stray torpedo...
I'm well aware of the risk, Commander, Tarkin said, giving full vent to his anger.
Inform your casualty notification officers that I'll assume personal responsibility for any collateral damage.
Execute Governor Tarkin's orders, Commander.
Vader said, in a calm voice that at once managed to be full of menace.
Yes, Lord Vader. Readying the warhead launch system.
The carrion spike was just short of crowning when her ion engines blazed to life and the ship hurtled away from the tanker in the direction of the escort carrier, firing all guns as she fled. All vigilance abandoned, Vader and Tarkin broke rimward in a flurry of evasive maneuvers while lines of destruction probed for them. Vader ordered what remained of the squadron to tighten up their ragged formation.
Enable countermeasures and pursue. That ship must not be allowed to jump.
But the carrion spike's laser cannons were already beginning to find their marks. Yellows 5 and 12 vanished in blinding explosions, adding debris to the obstacle course Vader and Tarkin had embarked on. Tarkin reopened the battle net to the Goliath.
What are you waiting for? Why aren't you firing?
Sir, the Corvette has disappeared from our scanners.
Fire along the path of a last logged vector, Tarkin said. Engage the tractor beam.
The escort carrier began firing at extreme range, its energy beams lancing off into local space. Vader and Tarkin were still spearheading the chase when a massive, rippling explosion erupted behind them. Tarkin looked over his left shoulder to see the tanker burst open in a roiling outpouring of fire and gas that annihilated all the ARC-170s and singed the tails of Yellow Squadron's trailing starfighters. When the expanding shockwave caught up with him, it overwhelmed the V-Wing, propelling it through end-over-end spins and lateral gyrations that refused to abate. After a long moment, the starfighter's systems came back online, and he heard Vader's voice over the tactical net.
The carrion spike has jumped to hyperspace.
Anyone else survive?
Tarkin managed to ask. The Goliath responded.
Two starfighters, in addition to the escort carrier.
Tarkin lifted his face to the canopy to find that he was facing what was left of the tanker, still belching fire and beginning a spiraling death plummet into Findar's atmosphere. What struck him, however, as he regained his senses, was that neither the carrion spike nor the Goliath had fired the shot that had doomed it.
Chapter 16. Hazard Mitigation. The carrion spike drifted aimlessly between worlds in another nameless star system. An unscheduled stop this time. The result of a split-second decision on Sadek's part, executed as the Corvette was scudding away from the exploding fuel tanker, chased by starfighters and with the escort carrier's cannons, tractor beam, and torpedoes desperately trying to find it. The ordeal at Findar had left the Corvette battered, bruised, and shaken. The armored hull was rashed with melt circles, and most of the exterior lights were molten heaps. The effects of the tractor beam, which had grabbed the ship more by chance than as the result of any skill on the part of the Goliath's crew, had ripped away part of the Rectenna array. The interior looked as if a whirlwind had blown through, and surges of energy had fried most of the appliances in the galley and medical bay. Areas of the ship were now off-limits because of airlock damage and radiation leaks. The toilets and showers had stopped working, and emergency illumination prevailed. Most of the alarms had been disabled to prevent them from sounding. Telltales were flashing across the command center's console, and some of the comp routines were refusing to reboot. Weapons and stealth systems, sensor suite, hyperdrive, and navicomputer had fared better, but the shield generators were functioning only at 50% capacity. On the bright side, Teller was telling his fellow shipjackers, close calls make for captivating holovids. All six of them were in the dimly lighted command cabin, nursing their wounds when they weren't fiddling with various instruments. Honora's forehead bore a square of Bacta patch, and some of her brownish curls had been clipped away to accommodate a second patch on her scalp.
The Empire has suspended holonet service to most of the sector, she said in a weak, defeated voice. I doubt our transmission reached more than half a dozen systems.
We only need to have reached one,
Teller said, trying to sound encouraging. Give it time and the holovid will spread to other sectors.
I didn't have a chance to edit out the lag before the tanker explosion, Hask said. But there's one sequence showing the starfighters ganging up on us.
Carla emerged from an access hatch in the deck plates.
The explosion would have taken out the Eta II and all the V-wings if the charge hadn't been late in detonating. It's possible the tanker's containment bins were equipped with sensors that monitor whether fuel cells are fully depleted. A sensor in the bin might have detected the bomb and initiated attempts to neutralize or contain the detonation.
Not our concern, Salik said from the command chair. The low light had little effect on his ability to see, and he was scanning the instruments as he spoke.
We're lucky we got away when we did. The Goliath had us in target lock.
Hask fixed her gaze on Teller.
You think Tarkin and Vader would have given the order to fire, knowing they might have blown up the tanker?
Are you asking seriously? Teller said. Hask frowned.
Maybe not about destroying the tanker, but his own starfighter pilots were in harm's way.
Teller leaned back against the portside bulkhead. Remember what I was telling you about Tarkin's days with the Outland Region Security Force and that special ship he designed with the swing and pintle-mounted front guns?
I remember.
Well, he didn't only deploy it against the pirates, Teller said. You'd think he would have blamed Iriadu's troubles on the Core Worlds, which were skimming most of the profits from the Sesuena's lomite trade. But he really had it in for the outlaws who were harassing the Sesuena. When Outland's counteroffenses stopped yielding the desired results, Tarkin decided to extend the militia's reach by targeting any groups that were supporting or harboring the Sesuena's foes. It didn't matter to him that the support groups were caught in the middle, threatened by pirates on one side and menaced by Outland on the other. Civilian casualties, you might say, Hask, but not to Tarkin. They were allies of his enemies, and that meant enemies of his and deserving whatever he decided to level against them. Teller firmed his lips and gave his head a mournful shake. Outland was brutal in what its warships dished out. No one knows how many were killed or where the bodies were buried. But even with the flotilla they'd amassed, Outland couldn't be everywhere at once. So Tarkin came up with the idea of making the supporters responsible for their own protection by arming them against the pirates. That way they managed to open a separate front against the pirates, and eventually turned one group of supporters against another. With everyone suspicious about who was secretly siding with or supporting whom, they began to turn on one another out of fear of reprisals from Outland. It was a kind of mutually assured annihilation, and ultimately Tarkin rid the Sesuena of its problems. Teller fell silent for a moment. You never know what events give shape to someone's life, to someone's moral choices. Maybe it was centuries of having to defend themselves against the predators, or the centuries of raids by pirates, slavers, and privateers that shaped the Iriaduan character. Maybe the history of the place seeped into their genetic makeup, resulting in an appetite for violence. But even that doesn't fully explain Tarkin, because most of the Iriaduans I've met aren't anything like him. Teller's gaze favored Hask. When Outland succeeded in chasing off what was left of the groups they hadn't killed, Tarkin turned his wrath on anyone who had come to Iriadu in flight from inter-system conflicts or in search of new lives, employment. You know, the ones taking jobs from native Iriaduans, crowding the cities, ruining the economy. The entire Tarkin clan waged a campaign against them. It didn't matter if they were human or other than. The point was that these social parasites were cheating Iriadu out of its just and hard-won rewards and keeping the planet from attaining the status of the Core Worlds. By this time, Tarkin was Iriadu's governor, and probably the most popular one the planet ever had. Fresh from Outland and years of academy life, he had the support of a cabal of influential officers who had trained to become judicials, but in fact were just itching for galactic war to break out.
Palpatine,
turned a blind eye to what was going on in the Sesuena. The deportations, the purges, the atrocities committed against any who found themselves on the Tarkin's extermination list. And not surprisingly, under Tarkin's rule, Iriadu finally achieved the celebrity it had been clamoring for. It became the rising star, the planet other eager-to-be-exploited worlds began looking up to. So, of course, the invisible players who had put Palpatine in power were just as eager to embrace Tarkin. Hell, he had already formed a military. It was to Iriadu the Coruscant looked when embarking down the same path. Why else do you think he attained so much in so few years and became such fast friends with Palpatine, those senators who were pushing for passage of the Military Creation Act, the members of the ruling council? Why do you think he makes such a perfect partner for Vader? Tella answered his own question. Because all of them share the same vision. They're the entitled ones who know what's best for the rest of us. Who should live? Who should die? To whom we should bow and how low? He glanced at Kala, Artos, and Salik. I don't need to remind any of you what Tarkin did at the end of the war when there weren't Jedi around to keep a lid on the violence and retribution. We wouldn't be aboard this ship otherwise. The Emperor is going to winnow the populations of the galaxy until the only ones left are the ones he can control. And he and Vader and Tarkin are going to accomplish that with an army of steadfast recruits who might as well be clones for the little independent thinking they do, weapons that haven't been seen in more than 1,000 years, and fear. Tella stepped away from the bulkhead, limping slightly as he found his way in the scant light to one of the acceleration chairs. You can think of the Carrion Spike as just a ship, but she's more than that. She's an expression of who Tarkin is. A small-scale example of the lengths he's willing to go. Stealth. Speed. Power. That's Tarkin, the omniscient, ubiquitous Imperial Enforcer. And that's why we're turning her into a symbol of something else. Of resistance. Hask narrowed her feline eyes and nodded in an uncertain way.
You know, it's funny, Tella. The last time you uncorked one of these lectures, you were saying how none of those we've killed were civilians because they were serving the Empire. To me, it sounds a lot like Tarkin's targeting of anyone who was aiding the pirates.
Tella nodded back at her. Yeah, Hask, except for one thing.
We're the good guys,
Honora said, pinning Tella with a sardonic look. Back in uniform and hands clasped behind his back, Tarkin stood side by side with Vader at the center of the Goliath's bridge, their presence imbuing the cabin space with a sense of uncharacteristic urgency.
Anything?
Tarkin sharply asked the non-com seated at the communications board.
Nothing, sir. Keep trying.
The escort carrier was still in Findar space, in part so that Tarkin could iron out responsibility for the tanker's destruction with the planetary leadership. Off to his left sat the ship's ashen-faced commander, not yet over the fact that he had nearly been made answerable for the deaths of the few starfighter pilots who had survived the fierce engagement with the Carrion Spike. While he didn't show it, Tarkin felt more accountable than the commander realized. He and Vader had been baited, and had come close to paying the price for rushing headlong into a trap. He took himself to task for his overconfidence at having predicted where the shipjackers would turn up, and promised that he wouldn't allow himself to make the same mistake twice. That the Goliath's arrival had taken the shipjackers by surprise only made their cunning escape all the more impressive. A tone sounded from the comm board, and Tarkin stepped forward in a rush, realizing at once that he had been premature.
"Report from Findar's rescue and recovery operation, sir,"
the non-com said after listening to her headset feed for a moment.
"They suspect that the tanker was destroyed by an explosive device concealed inside a spent fuel cell."
"Then the dissidents weren't merely attempting to use the tanker as cover,"
Tarkin said.
"They were hoping to draw us in, as much to avoid having to face the storm of our unexpected arrival, as in the hope that we, too, would be caught up in the explosion." A short holovid of the clash, the ensuing chase, and the explosion had been received 3 hours earlier by a couple of local systems. The delayed transmission of the holovid told Tarkin that the shipjackers had waited until the carrion spike emerged from hyperspace, which also provided him with some idea of the distance the ship had traveled, though not in which direction. Turning to Vader, he said, "Perhaps it would have been wiser to target the tanker from the start." Vader folded his arms across his chest and shook his head.
"The Emperor would not have approved."
Tarkin regarded him. It was an odd comment coming from Vader, given the atrocities he had perpetrated for the Emperor since the end of the war. He wondered if Vader was testing him, just as he felt the Emperor had been doing during their most recent meeting. "If we aren't willing to do whatever is required," he said finally, "then we risk losing what we have been mandated to protect." The remark paraphrased something Skywalker had said to him following the Citadel rescue, but it got no reaction from Vader beyond his saying,
"You misunderstand, Governor. As I said, we need to gather all of them in our net."
The Comboard chimed again, this time with better and more anticipated news.
"Sir, we're receiving location coordinates from the tracking device."
Tarkin didn't bother to hide his excitement.
"The Findian administrator did one thing right. I was almost certain he lied to me."
Vader nodded.
"He served the Empire well in his final moments."
Tarkin stood behind the non-com at the comm board. "What is the source of the transmissions?" The non-com waited for interface data to arrive from the Goliath's navicomputer.
"Sir? The source is sector designated as LCC-447, parsec equidistant from the Sumitra and Svitayan systems."
"Those are Corwood, in the expansion region," Tarkin said, with genuine unease.
"Yes, sir. Closest principal planets are Thustra and Aquarius."
Vader looked at Tarkin.
"Now, Governor, we get to spring the trap."
One of the few areas of the former Jedi Temple that had not undergone renovation was the holographic galactic map, an enormous globular representation of the galaxy located mid-level in what had been the Jedi Council spire. The Order had used the map to keep track of its far-flung members. Now it served to identify trouble spots in the Emperor's realm. The Emperor had consented to allowing the members of his ruling council to confer with representatives of the intelligence services, in the hope that Tarkin and Vader's latest strategy would conclude the search for the Moff's ship and bring the shipjackers' co-conspirators to light. While no less irritated by the fact that a group of insignificant mutants from the galactic underbelly were scurrying about trying to stir up trouble, curiosity had gotten the better of him. Mere eddies in the current of the dark side had transformed into rapids and whirlpools. He sat in a simple chair atop a podium not unlike the one in the audience chamber, with some of his colorfully clothed advisors arrayed beneath him. Mos Amida, R. Stangor, Janus Grigetus, and Kren Blistavani. Intelligence chiefs Ison and Rancid stood opposite the ruling council members, making their cases from a circular walkway secured to the curved wall of the spire at the base of the holographic globe. "My lord, Vice Admiral Rancid and I do find ourselves in agreement on one issue," Ison was in the midst of saying. "If Governor Tarkin is going to continue to make unilateral decisions of the sort he made at Findar, then he should be doing so on Coruscant, coordinating the efforts of the Imperial military instead of chasing his errant corvette all over the Outer Rim." Rancid waited until he was certain that Ison had spoken his piece.
"My lord, with the carrion spike now reported to be in the expansion region, this crisis takes on greater exigency. It's possible that the dissident's plan calls for the corvette to be joined by the warship."
"I'm not interested in what is possible, Vice Admiral," the Emperor interrupted. "I'm interested in knowing your plans for dealing with the possibilities."
Rancid bowed his head. "Of course, my lord. though I must stress that naval intelligence has detected unusual activity throughout that sector of the expansion region, as if unknown parties are attempting to flood certain star systems with traffic.
The Emperor leaned toward him.
As you are flooding star systems with our warships.
Rancid blinked and stood tall.
My lord, we are simply attempting to safeguard our interests in those systems. Given the path the dissidents have pursued, we think it reasonable to assume that they are intent on targeting systems in the inner rim, from which potential hyperspace jump points and destinations will multiply beyond measure. We have taken the liberty of declaring some key systems no entry zones, but the need to allocate resources to other systems grows only more complicated.
The Emperor's gaze favored Ison.
Do you disagree with the Vice Admiral, Deputy Director?
Not entirely, my lord.
The increased activities Vice Admiral Rancid alludes to could be the result of holovids transmitted from the Carrion Spike. Compnor surveillance and investigation operatives in several sectors have noted an increase in both anti-imperial propaganda and mobilization among malcontent groups. ISB is making arrests and interrogating prisoners in various imperial facilities in an effort to learn the identity of the culprits. As odd as it sounds, my lord, we have also been receiving intelligence from the Crimora Syndicate, which apparently shared some nefarious affiliation with the criminal subcontractors who operated Findar's fueling station.
The Emperor steepled his fingers. My instructions to Lord Vader and Moff Tarkin were to make an example of the shipjackers, not to allow the shipjackers to make a laughingstock of the Empire's intelligence chiefs.
Turning his hooded gaze on Rancid, he made a beckoning motion with the fingers of his right hand.
Enlighten us as to what you would have us do, Vice Admiral.
Rancid cleared his throat before beginning.
My lord, rather than engage the dissidents at the present location, which Governor Tarkin has yet to make known to us, he proposes waiting for them to plot a course to their next target and ensnaring them there.
In fact, Vader and Tarkin had made the location known, but the Emperor kept that to himself. Instead, he said,
given that they have successfully escaped each such attempt, just how do you propose to ensnare them?
By utilizing interdictor cruisers, my lord, precisely placed to yank the Carrion Spike from hyperspace short of its destination system and reversion point. Governor Tarkin assures us that any jump from the dissident's current location will require at least 2 reversions to reach potential Imperial targets. Thus, interdictors can be positioned in advance of the Carrion Spike's arrival.
The Emperor looked down at Kren Blistervani.
The requested interdictors are being developed as part of the Deep Core Security Zone, my lord. Fond of wearing flamboyant hats and frequenting the opera, Blistervani was a relative newcomer to the ruling council, but had already proven an asset in blazing hyperspace routes into the Deep Core star systems. I hasten to add, however, that the ship's gravity well projectors have not been tested in scenarios of this sort.
The Emperor mulled it over for a moment, then looked at Rancid once more.
Tell me about these potential targets.
Permit me, my lord,
Rancid said, gesturing to the star map and amplifying a portion of it.
Our main concerns are Lantilles, from which we have already repositioned many of our resources. Also the Imperial Facility on Kartal, and Ice Station Beta on Antivi. An attack on Tanab, though on the Perlemian trade route, would earn the dissidents more condemnation than praise, as Tanab's agricultural projects feed billions in the mid and outer rim. The same holds true for an attack on Garrus because of the university, though there is also an Imperial facility on world.
Rancid paused.
Do you wish me to go on, my lord?
By way of answer, the Emperor glanced at Ison.
As I've said on countless occasions, my lord, the fleet is already too scattered. On the Admiralty's council, the Navy is now redirecting resources from as far away as Rothana and Bothawai.
And at the risk of repeating myself,
Rancid said,
Imperial interests must be protected.
The Emperor spent a long moment studying Eisen and Rancid, stretching out with his powers to discern alignments, configurations, some syzygy of events. Then his thoughts turned to Vader and Tarkin. He appreciated how well they were working together, but he began to wonder if they were perhaps too close to the details of the dissidents' scheme to recognize their ultimate objective. One needed to have a safe remove, as he felt he had, gazing into the 3D representation of the galaxy he had made his own. How Plagueis would have mocked him for allowing himself to become personally involved in such a seemingly trivial matter. But then his master had never foreseen that his one-time apprentice would become Emperor. With a subtle gesture, he signaled Mos Amida to join him on the podium. When the Shagrian arrived, he said,
Tell me again how the cache of communications jammers was discovered on Mercana.
One of Imperial Security's assets was tasked with investigating the find by his case officer,
Amida said, in a little more than a whisper. The Emperor considered this.
His ISB case officer, here on Coruscant.
Yes, my lord.
The Emperor collapsed the steeple he had made of his fingers.
Summon them, Vizier. I suspect some benefit will accrue from my speaking personally with both.
Chapter 17. Zero Defects. Weapons recharged, the interior made as shipshape as possible. The Carrion Spike waited for instructions regarding when to launch and where to jump. From the co-pilot's chair, Teller, back in boots and cargo pants, watched Salik run through a pre-flight check of the instruments and systems. When the Gotl's hand reached the navicomputer, however, it hovered in hesitation. Problem? Teller asked. Salik kept his eyes trained on one of the status displays.
It's probably nothing, but...
Teller sat bolt upright in the chair's webbing.
It's probably nothing, but I've had this pain in my side. It's probably nothing, but my girlfriend's been acting distant lately.
He gave his head an aggravated shake.
Whenever I hear that phrase,
it's the fuel capacity, Salik cut in. Factoring in the cells we took on at Findar, something doesn't add up.
That Findian cheated us, Teller exclaimed. No wonder he was being so nonchalant.
Salik's twin-horned head was shaking back and forth.
That's not it.
Teller leaned toward the console.
Maybe you didn't notice we weren't full up when we separated from the tanker.
The Gotl's head continued to shake.
I checked. At least, I think I did. But even if I overlooked a detail, the discrepancy doesn't make sense.
We had to override that tractor beam.
No.
Teller looked at Artos, who was sitting quietly in the comm officer's chair, watching both of them.
Any ideas?
The Mon Cal thought for a moment, tapping his webbed hand on the console.
The hyperdrive motivator may be addled. We could try recalibrating the synchronization relays.
Salik forced an exhale.
It's probably nothing.
His hand was reaching for the navicomputer controls again when Teller told him to hold off and then shouted through the ruined hatch for Carla, who was in the conference cabin.
You've got to put the hazmat suit back on, Teller said as the Corvair entered from the afterdeck.
Carla stared at him.
You're trying to overdose me on rads, is that it? You've decided I'm expendable?
Calm down, Teller said, gesturing. I just need you to go into the fuel bay and run tests on the fuel cells we took on at Findar. You'll know them because they're Wyborg Jensens, marked with the tanker's logo, a kind of triple S.
Carla's shoulders sagged in defeat.
What am I supposed to be looking for?
With any luck,
Nothing more than an empty or faulty cell,
Arto said. Carla scowled.
That Findian cheated us.
Let's hope so, Tella said, freeing himself from the chair's safety webbing and getting to his feet. Come on, I'll help suit you up.
Frozen hatches and malfunctioning airlocks forced them to follow a circuitous route to the fuel hold. Once sealed into the hooded, face-shielded hazmat suit, Carla disappeared through the airlock, and Tella returned to the command cabin, where he found Honora seated in the co-pilot's chair.
What's going on?
She asked, her words more a demand than a question. It's probably nothing, he started to say, then stopped himself. Enabling the intraship comlink, he said, Carla, you inside?
I'm checking them now. Power level indicators look good.
Tella had turned toward Honora when Carla added,
Wait, the sensor found one. The cell is reading empty.
One of the Findians?
It has the logo.
Can you remove it? Carla replied with a lengthy curse.
I told you we should have brought a droid along.
I know you did, but think of the headaches a droid would have caused Salik.
Tella aimed a grin at the magnetically sensitive Gotal.
Besides, we didn't, and you're our best bet. Is the repulsor lift conveyor still in there?
Right where I left it after rigging the bomb.
Task the conveyor to remove the cell,
Arto said toward the audio pickup.
And transfer it into the decontam bay so the diagnostic unit can have a look at it.
Have a look at it how?
Carla said.
The sensor says it's empty.
We need to open it up, Tella said.
Are you out of your mind?
Carla barked.
Suppose there's a bomb inside.
Tella tried to make light of the idea. That's something only we do. Anyway, that's why you're letting the diagnostic unit do it. It'll scan the cell first.
This is the last time I'm putting this suit on,
Carla said. Deal. Next time I'll have Honora do it.
A gesture from her revealed her feelings on the matter. Another curse from Carla broke the long silence.
It's not empty.
Tella exchanged nervous glances with Salik and Arto's.
What's inside?
Everyone stared at the command center enunciator, as if the Kurovar were there, in the command cabin.
A device of some sort,
Carla reported finally.
Nothing like I've ever seen.
All right,
Arto said, trying to keep his resonant voice calm.
Task the diagnostic to cam the device, then run the image through the ship's library.
Carla exhaled loudly.
Hold on.
Again, the intraship comlink went quiet, and Tella ran a hand down his face.
It's probably not...
Honora started to say when he shushed her.
Damn! Tella, it's an Imperial homing beacon,
the Kurovar said.
Database describes it as a paralyte tracker, a kind of holonet transceiver that passes commands from the ship's navicomputer.
Salik swiveled to face the others, his eyes wide with astonishment.
Tarkin knows not only where we are, but also where we are planning to go, which means we're essentially marooned. Unless you want to get there by sublight, which will only take...
He glanced at a console readout.
On the order of 50 years.
Maybe we've done enough, Honora said, touching her injured scalp. We call it quits right here.
Tella shook his head at her.
We haven't done near enough.
Carla's distant voice intruded.
Should I disable this thing?
No. Don't do anything just yet, Tella told him. Let it sit in there and get yourself forward.
He glanced around the command cabin.
Let's consider this from Tarkin's side.
Yes, why don't we?
Honora said in plain anger.
Tarkin knows we are here, Arto said, and he is convinced that he has a good read on our intentions.
With good reason, Salik said.
He knows we're here, Tella said, thinking out loud. But he hasn't come for us.
He cut his gaze to Arto's. Obviously, he's waiting to see what we enter into the navicomputer so he can beat us there.
So he and Vader, and whoever else, maybe the entire Imperial Navy by this time, can beat us there,
the Mon Cal said.
No doubt they're calculating all possible jump egresses from this system.
Tella nodded in agreement. Of which there have to be dozens.
Meanwhile, Salik said, the Navy's deploying ships to every system where Tarkin thinks we'll show ourselves.
Honora looked up from studying her hands.
Is there a way to enter false coordinates into the Navi computer?
Salik shook his head negatively.
Not while that tracker is enabled.
No one spoke for a moment, and Tella said, at this point, we just need to buy some time, right? So suppose we supply Tarkin with jump coordinates into a very busy star system.
Honora's thin eyebrows formed a V.
I don't see how that helps us, unless you're counting on hiding in a traffic jam.
We supply the coordinates, Tella said, but we don't jump.
You mean?
We get someone else to do it.
Standing proudly on the elevated command bridge walkway of the star destroyer Executrix, Tarkin felt more at home than he had in years. An Imperial-class wedge-shaped Titan, the warship had just decanted in the Obroa Sky system after a jump from Lantilles on Tarkin's learning that the Carrion Spike was on her way. The panoramic view through the bridge's bay of trapezoidal windows included nearly all the ships that made up the task force. In the distance, positioned against a radiant sweep of stars, floated three interdictor vessels. A Detainer CC-2200, a newer model CC-7700 frigate, and, fresh from deep dock in the Corellia system and as yet untested, an Immobilizer 418. Thickly armored, the former two had downsloping bows and stubby wing-like lateral projections housing quartets of gravity well projectors. The Immobilizer, by contrast, featured four hemispherical projectors aft on the ship's sharp-bowed hull. Deployed in the middle distance between the interdictors and the Executrix were frigates, pickets, and gunboats. The centermost picket carried Vader, Crest, promoted by Vader to lieutenant, and some two dozen stormtroopers who made up a boarding party in the unlikely event that the Carrion Spike could be retaken without a fight, or at least put out of commission rather than reduced to wreckage. A hollow table situated starboard and below the elevated command walkway displayed a 3D chronometer counting down in standard time to the Carrion Spike's estimated moment of arrival. As expected, the dissidents had jumped the ship from her original location to the remote Thustra system, and after spending several hours there, had charged the navicomputer to plot a course for Obroa Sky. The ETA was based on the assumption that the Carrion Spike had gone to light speed at that moment or soon after, and on how quickly the Corvette's Class 1 hyperdrive could deliver her. An earlier than expected arrival would find the ship reverting to real space deeper in system, where other Imperial warships, including the Goliath, were positioned to intercept her. A more sophisticated homing beacon would have allowed Tarkin to track the Corvette through hyperspace by way of S-thread transceivers, but the stormtrooper squadron assigned to the Findar fuel tanker had had access only to a basic device that interfaced with the ship's navicomputer. A specialist, seated at a console in the most forward of the sunken data pits, got Tarkin's attention.
"Sir, the quarry is due at T-120.
Tarkin angled the microphone of his headset closer to his mouth and opened the battle net to the task force liaison officer, who was aboard the CC-7700 frigate.
"The projectors are powering up to high gain, Governor Tarkin,"
the commander said.
"The field will be initiated, then disabled, in an effort to keep from dragging vessels other than the quarry from hyperspace. I should caution, however, that that may be unavoidable, given the heavy traffic in this system."
"I understand, Commander," Tarkin said. "Order your technicians to be judicious, nonetheless."
"I will, sir. But the power setting of the gravity wells is dictated to some extent by the relative speed of the targeted ship. And, well, sir, to be blunt about it, there aren't many as fast as the Carrion Spike."
Tarkin pinched his lower lip in thought.
Ideally, local systems would have been notified that Obroa Sky had been designated a no-entry zone, but Naval Command had opted against issuing the designation for fear of alerting the dissidents. He had other reasons for concern. Chiefly, the question of why the dissidents would jump to Obroa Sky, which lacked anything in the way of an Imperial target, and was known mostly for its med centers and libraries.
T-minus 30 and counting, the specialist in the data pit announced. Moving to the forward end of the walkway, Tarkin fixed his gaze on the trio of interdictors. Arms folded across his chest, he counted down in silence, even while the voice of the specialist was doing the same in his right earbead. The countdown had just reached T-minus 5 when Tarkin was yanked forward, nearly completely off his feet. Fearing another lurch, he spread his hands wide and so was kept from being slammed head first into the closest viewport panel. Klaxons began to howl throughout the suddenly trembling command bridge as the giant ship groaned and lurched yet again in the direction of the distant interdictors. Struggling to remain upright, Tarkin caught a glimpse of the middle-distance frigates and pickets being pulled forward, almost as if accelerating.
Commander!
He shouted into the headset mouthpiece. The field is too powerful.
Working on it, sir,
the commander said with equal volume.
It's the immobilizer.
The overcurrent resistors failed to prevent the gravitic systems from redlining.
The comlink connection broke. Close to the interdictors, ships began to appear, where there had only been star-filled space. Tarkin turned from the forward bay and stumbled back to the data pit to study the magnified view on one of the screens. First to drop out of hyperspace was an outmoded saucer-shaped YT-1000 freighter, followed by two angular transports and a lustrous space yacht. Then another freighter winked into visibility, followed by two passenger vessels. Abruptly, Tarkin felt as if he'd been shoved toward the rear of the bridge. With the interdiction field neutralized, the ships that had been caught in the invisible web began to whirl out of control. Two of the ships collided and drifted out of view. The magnification screen showed the sublight engines of other ships flashing, but the ships barely had a chance to flee or correct their spins when the field reinitiated, capturing them once again. Tarkin spread his legs wide in an effort to balance himself. Then his eyes went wide as well as he turned to face the viewports. Listing on its port side, an enormous ship that more resembled something grown than built, decanted, broadsiding the detainer CC-2200 before careening into a spin that left its dorsal surface impaled on the interdictor's sloping bow.
Moncal Star Cruiser,
a voice in his ear said, loud enough to be heard over the head-splitting racket of the klaxons.
The luxury liner Stella Vista out of Corson. Approximately 10,000 aboard.
A brief but nova-bright explosion flared in the distance, ferocious enough to leave Tarkin blinking and seeing stars that weren't there. When he was able to focus through the viewport's blast tinting, he saw that the stern of the organically sculpted passenger ship had disappeared, and that the interdictor had been knocked 90 degrees from its former position. In moments, pod-like lifeboats and flocks of spherical escape pods were streaming from the stricken liner.
The Stella Vista reports that it is in imminent distress,
the specialist said.
The ship's captain is requesting all the help we can provide.
Tarkin swung toward the data pits, but spoke into the headset. Order the frigates to render assistance. Instruct the interdictors to negate the field and move us into a position where we can utilize the tractor beams to grab the lifeboats. All at once, Vader's voice was booming in his ear.
Where is your corvette, Governor? It is not on any of our scanners. Do you have it?
Tarkin hurried to the edge of the walkway and gestured to one of the seated non-coms. Have you located the carrion spike? The spec turned to him.
No sign of the corvette, sir. Could it be in stealth mode?
Tarkin compressed his lips and shook his head. Not even a cloaking device could keep it from being detected in an interdiction field. A second spec called to him.
Sir, the task force commander wants to know if you wish the interdictors to reinitiate the field. Some of the transports are trying to make a run for it.
Tarkin had his mouth open to reply when Vader said,
I want all those ships corralled. Hold them in place with tractor beams if you have to, but none should be allowed to leave.
Tarkin nodded to the non-coms. Contain those vessels. And the lifeboat, sir? One asked.
We'll see to them when we can.
Yet a third specialist joined in.
Sir, one of our frigates is taking fire.
Tarkin moved farther down the command walkway to stand over her.
On screen.